Oh, thanks very much, Mike.
Dave, thanks for coming on. Look, a lot of people would be intrigued about where you grew up and where did the drive for long distance running come from?
I was born, grew up in Devonport. And I was playing basketball, and we had there was a professional trainer, well, more pro trainer, trained professional athletes here along, you know, for the carnivals and that. And he'd come along and watch us training for basketball, and he saw me, well, I'd go out for a training run or something and come back, and I wasn't feeling too distressed like everybody else. And he made me an offer to go out and train with him over the summer, which I did. And but he wanted me to turn pro, because at the time it was only the amateurs or professionals. And if I did that, I couldn't play basketball, so I didn't do it. But, and that's when I got started in it, just running down the local Interclub or here in Devonport.
And was there any history of athletics or long-distance running in the family? Does it go back through the genes at all?
Well, my dad, I've got a little medal here. He won at Devonport Primary School for, he was a school champ for 100, 200, long jump, triple jump, and a few other things and pieces. It might have even been the hurdles in there as well.
Yeah. So and, plenty of history there.
And my mum won some heading on a Mersey, 100 metre sprint or something. Well, no, she didn't win it. She got second. That's right.
All right.
For women, yeah, for girls, yeah, when she was a little girl.
Well, that's amazing. So I suppose there's something there that's actually been has been passed on to you. Now, basketball was the other love. Did you have any other sport, or were you just a sports mad kid?
I used to row for Reece High, or Reece Onion Rowing Club.
Yeah.
That was one of the founding members of the club, and we used to row in the summer and play basketball in the winter. And then I did play a bit of footy at school, but Reece High School was only just starting up, and we never had enough for a team. We already had 13 or 14 players each week, so we were pretty overwhelmed down the back line where I was. So they abandoned it, and so we took up basketball and in the winter and rode in the summer until I got collared to do the training with this Herbie Smith.
Yeah, tell us about Herbie Smith.
He was just a trainer of pro runners along the coast here. And he was the one that came along and saw me training for basketball and just persuaded me to go out there. But he wanted me to turn pro, run dead for 3 years, and in 1 year I'd win the Burning Mile.
Yep.
And I thought, there's got to be... And if I did that, I couldn't then play basketball. So got to be more to this running bit than that. And I started reading a fit. There wasn't any much TV or internet around then, and I was just reading as many books as I could on and magazines on athletics, track running.
What were the things?
Ron Clark, those sort of people.
What were the things you were looking for there? Just training methods and how they went about it.
Just reading about their careers and how they got on and what races they'd run that sort of got me interested. And then I got called up into national service in the Army in 72. And I just had one season of, you know, like amateur running. And I remember I had been home on leave, and I was going back to Pakapanyu, and I had a couple of hours to kill in Melbourne before the train went up to Seymour. And I remember seeing the 72 Olympics in Munich on TV in a my window shop, and I thought, geez, I'd like to go there. And so I decided then to give running a bit of a go, and when I got out from National Service.
And that was in 72, and in 76, Montreal.
All right, yeah.
that's incredible. What did you do in that time to prepare yourself for ultimately sort of getting an opportunity to run in the Montreal Olympics?
I got discharged because there was a change of government in December 72, and I'd heard about a good coach down Hobart, Max Cherry. And he was training a guy called Randall Markey and a few others.
Yeah, remember Randall.
And, yeah, so I went down there, or moved to Hobart, and met up with him and was sort of told him a bit about me, and he saw me run a couple of inter-club races and said, oh, yeah, right, I will take you on. And I wasn't all that flash then, but I kept persisting at it, and because I was more a training hack for Randall. And then I think there was a fun run. Yeah, there was a fun run down the hill somewhere, a 10-mile, and I just cruised it in and ran in 50 minutes, which was, at the time, a pretty quick time. Mm-hmm. And from then on, I became more attuned to sort of the longer distance running.
Mm. Yeah. And and what did Max teach you? Was it technique? Was it running technique? What was it? Was it how to time your run? Was it tactically? What was Max good at?
Just a lot of hard training, that's all.
Yeah.
Really long distance running. Like, I was doing probably about 200K a week. And, you know, I built up to it. I didn't do it straight away. But just a lot of training.
Yeah.
And racing, yeah.
And before the Montreal Olympics, you ran in Morocco in 75 at the World Cross Country Championships. Was that your first time overseas, or had you been overseas prior to that?
I'd been to Puerto Rico for a race for a half marathon, and it was an awful trip. I only got there the day before the race after about 36 hours travelling, and then I got back to Australia, and they decided to send a cross-country team, the first ever Australian cross-country team to the Morocco for the World Championships. So I got off one plane and got onto another one and went on the other side of the world.
Not so much jet lag or...
Yeah. We had a couple of days, or about a week or so, to acclimatise, but still I was pretty knocked around, you know, physically.
Yeah. I'm speaking to former Olympian David Chettle, and David... In 76, as I said, you ran at the Montreal Olympics, a real rapid rise from watching something on television in 1972, a basketball on TV. But that was a little disappointing for you in that race at Montreal, wasn't it? Because you had to pull out at the 25K mark because you were suffering from an illness.
Yeah, I sort of disclosed a fever, but I had a fair bit of pressure. I was the last event on the last day, and Australia, as you know, didn't win a gold medal there, so I was it.
Yeah.
And I'd been ranked number 3 in the world the year before, so I had sort of a bit of a chance, but just wasn't up to it.
Yeah. And you spent a fair bit of time in London in the late 1970s, and you would have ran against some of the real superstars of distance running, and you beat some of them on occasion. What was that like? That like over at that particular point?
It was like, you know, we've got the Bernie 10 here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in Europe somewhere, at the time, there was a Bernie 10 type race somewhere in Europe, and you just had to know the organisers and promoters and just give them a call and say you're here. And because you're being Australian, a little bit more exotic than the regular, you know, French, German, Italian runners, mm-hmm. English runners. So that welcome me to go along and go and compete. So they pay your airfares and a bit of accommodation and a bit of meal money, and away you went.
Yeah. Who were some of the big names, David, you were up against? I know Lassie Varenne was probably one of them.
Franco Fava, he's from Italy. Raced him a lot of times. Brendan Foster, Geordie McLeod, Nat Muir from Scotland.
Yeah.
I did beat Steve Ovett's. He had a half marathon record somewhere.
That was in Fukuoka?
No.
Half marathon. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yep.
And Kenny Hall was an Australian miler, and he said he's sick of Ovett bragging about this half marathon record he's got, because it's a bit exotic for a miler to be running that far. And so he said, see what you can do about it. So I knocked a couple of minutes off for him. Yeah.
So, did you feel like that was that the peak?
The peak.
The peak of your running. Where was your peak?
Oh, it's hard to say. I mean, I ebbed and flowed a bit. I would run one or two good races and then get a bit not so good, but probably the best, well, the best race I had would have been in Fukuoka in 75 when I finished second in 2010-20. So, but then I had a bit of, after the Olympics, I had a bit of a lull, and then I went to New Zealand for a race. It was called the Auckland Marathon, and I ran 2 hours, 2 minutes, and 24 seconds.
Wow.
But unfortunately, it was about 2K short. So I couldn't claim it, but if they ran it, re-ran it in a computer, and I ended up with about 2:09:45, which was pretty good. But, I mean, I couldn't claim it, so, it's a bit disappointing, and it's like a marathon. You can't go and run one next week. It takes about 3 or 4 months to get over one.
Yeah. Well, Dave, stick with us. We'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll continue having a chat with you. Just stay there for us. We'll be back in a moment. My guest is David Chettle. I'm talking with the legend of running, long-distance running cross-countries, David Chettle, a former Olympian. Dave, once again, thanks for coming on. In 1978, you went to Edmonton in the Commonwealth Games. You turned in a performance 15th. Were you disappointed with that, or was that a race that was run under difficult circumstances for you? How did you rate your 15th?
It didn't run all that well. Wasn't that, but there was a lot of, because I didn't finish the Montreal Olympics, the selectors were not very keen to select me. So, and I ran about three, because I'd run the race in Auckland, which was short, and they wouldn't accept that as a qualifying time. And then I went to Japan and ran a race and ran 2:17, which was okay, but not quick enough. And then I had to run the trial, which was, so I ran about three races in about 6 months, and that knocked me down a bit because the trial I won in about 2:14, which was good enough, and then when I got to the Edmonton, I'd had enough. I think your body just says no, we're not doing this anymore. So I should have had a bit longer break, but it was a bit disappointing. Anyway.
Yeah, you said before the break that when you run a marathon, it takes you 3 or 4 months to get over it. What do you do during that period of time in recovery from a marathon? Obviously, shorter runs, you must keep running,
well,
I guess, in some form.
I'm going to say, to get over one, it takes about a month.
Right.
So you take a month of just easy, light running, and then you can then gradually build your training up again to do another one in about, some people only do two a year, but at the time, most people were doing about three, which was every 4 months, if they could space them out that much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now you ran that amazing marathon in Fukuoka, is it?
Fukuoka.
And you made a phone call to someone after you rang that. You rang Max Cherry after that personal best. Now, there's a bit of a story to tell about that, I believe.
Well, I rang him up and I said, Max, I've got the results of the Fukuoka Marathon. He said, yeah, all right. So, first, you're Jerome Drayton, Canada, 2 hours, 10 minutes and 8 seconds. Yeah, I could hear him sort of, yeah, right. And I said, then second, D. Chettle, Australia, 2 hours, 10. He said, yeah, 2 hours. What?
So he was shocked. It must have been a personal triumph for him too, I guess, to see you running like that.
Before I went, we were predicting I'd probably run about 2:14, which was an improvement of about 2 minutes on my previous best time. So that was what I was expecting, and then I thought 2:13 if you're really lucky, and anything after that, it's just dreaming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And tactically, is there a reason why that was such a good time, or was it just sometimes you get in a rhythm and it's just all clicks?
I had some really good training before I went, and the day was absolutely ideal for marathons. It was calm. It was a bit cloudy. It was about 5-6 degrees, and it was a beautiful flat course. And I was going to my predetermined pace, and then after a while, you just get confused. You can't be bothered working it out, so you just start racing. And I just, well, I was about, at the halfway, I was about six, but the guy who was leading had a pack of, you know, other four or five guys with him, and he dropped them off, and they were spaced evenly in front of me about every 30 or 40 metres. And I just worked my way up to one, and then I got to the next one, and I got, and then I found myself, oh, I'm in the lead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you held on. Held on for grim death and came second, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I had a lot left, and I thought, but I was cramping it. I never run it fast in my life, and I was cramping it very badly in my hamstrings. I thought, I don't want to blow it and not finish, so I eased up a bit just to get across the line as best I could.
Mm. Yeah, it's sometimes it must be like that. You look back on a race and just think, oh, I could have gone harder at that section or that section, but then when you've run so far, sometimes the mind plays tricks on you. Now, you held the 5,000 and the 10,000-metre Tasmanian records for about 45 years, and which is an amazing effort, and it took a real modern-day superstar to knock you off, Stuart McSwain, and I believe that both yourself and Stuart have formed a really nice friendship.
Oh, yeah, I've met him a few times, yeah, and so, yeah, we got on really well. And in fact, I went down to see him at Penguin when he ran the mile record for Australia mile record.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so it was, yeah, and just had a good chat about it and things coming up and what to do, yeah.
Yeah, he's really on the up, isn't he? He's quite incredible, and we've got really high hopes for him. I hope the pressure doesn't, of expectation doesn't get to him, but it doesn't seem as if he's that type of character.
No, and I think that's got a lot more support now than we've ever had before with, you know, coaches and support staff. So I'm sure his coaches, Nick Bedeau is very much aware of you know, that and can keep him sort of on, well, focused on what he's
got to do. Yeah. And look, in this day and age where there's lots of sponsorship and all that sort of thing, you were one of the first international athletes to gain sponsorship from Nike, and that connection with the company remains, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. My daughter's actually working for them now.
Yeah.
She's over in Beaverton, which is near Portland in Oregon. Yeah, she works for them. Yeah, which is, and it's an amazing setup they've got over there at the moment.
Yeah.
Because I visited her back in 2019, before all this COVID stuff.
Yeah. And speaking of your children, they also took up running, and they won athletic scholarships at American University. So you must be very proud of the way that your children have sort of followed a little bit in your footsteps.
Oh yeah. It was quite amazing. I wasn't all that keen from the start, but they seemed to sort of go to it, you know, gravitate towards it very readily and did very well.
That's terrific. And now, as you said at the top of this interview, you live in Devonport. Now, I guess you follow the local footy. I think you go and watch the Magpies play in the NWFL with Mike Gunson. And when I called you the other day about having a chat to us, you're still doing the odd carpentry job.
Yes, unfortunately. I got roped into doing a few odd jobs around the place, yeah.
And you're closing in on the big 7-0 at the moment. Dave, do you still sort of go out and have a light run? Do you still do a little bit of something, or are the pins just not what they used to be?
No, I've had a couple of operations on my knee and one on my ankle, and so I just walk now. I'd go probably every day I'd go for a walk, probably an hour, just to keep fit. And I do a bit of fishing, you know, fly fishing up the lake, so I got there a fair bit and wander around.
Yeah. All right. It's just an amazing story, David, and really I think needed to be told a little bit more of on a local basis. We're looking for people on the northwest coast that have excelled in their chosen sport. And you represented Tasmania in basketball in 1971, and you had an amazing career.
That was in the senior. I had two junior teams as well.
Yeah, in the juniors as well, coming up through. Yep.
Yeah, under 18, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. And then from seeing that basketball match, that somehow just triggered something off on you, and you just wanted to become a runner. And it's just been fantastic to spend a bit of time with you, David, and talk about your career. And, it's just been terrific. So thanks for joining us on the Sideline View.
No worries, Mike.